The first alarm sounded on a quiet Tuesday morning when a cluster of investors gathered in a small conference room above a strip mall. They were used to steady updates and confident messages about safety, but today the air felt tight. A few held printed statements that no longer matched the balances on their screens. Others scrolled through unread messages from Patrick Regan's team that repeated the same line about temporary delays. No one understood why withdrawals were suddenly frozen. One man tried to call his contact on speaker. The call rang once, then dropped. A woman at the back whispered that her neighbor had already contacted a local officer. Another investor said his last payout had come late and smaller than promised. By mid-morning, the group began sending each other screenshots of conflicting messages, all hinting at problems behind the scenes. The questions spread from person to person. Were they dealing with a short-term setback, or had the safety they were promised never existed at all? Chapter 1, The First Cracks in the Promise. The room stayed quiet for a long moment as the last investor lowered his phone. The attempted call had failed again. People shifted in their seats and looked around as if someone else would step forward with an answer. No one had one. They only had growing worry. The sharp confidence that once surrounded the next level in yield products had started to fade. 2 weeks earlier, these same investors still felt sure about what they had been told. Patrick Regan and his team had talked about safety in clear, calm tones. They spoke about asset-backed protection, steady monthly returns, and a structure that guarded investor money. Those messages had reached church groups, small business networks, and retirees looking for a reliable income. The pitch had sounded simple and disciplined. When people first heard it, they felt relieved. They were tired of confusion in the financial world. They wanted something stable. Regan's team repeated that message every time they held a presentation. They often stood in front of slideshow boards in community centers, rental offices, or hotel conference rooms. They told people that the next level and yield products worked because they followed very old rules of finance. Slow and steady growth, low risk, strong oversight inside the company. One early investor remembered the way Regan spoke. He kept his voice steady and friendly. He said the structure used a proven cycle and that the team monitored funds daily. He used clear terms that made listeners feel comfortable. He rarely spoke about anything complicated. He talked about safety and growth. He talked about transparency. Investors in the room nodded and felt encouraged. Most people who joined in those early days had come from invitations by friends or family. They trusted the person who sent them the link to join an online session or attend a small pitch event. That trust made the process feel natural. If a friend had already earned returns, then the rest of the group felt it was safe to join too. Regan's team relied heavily on that chain of trust. They often encouraged investors to bring a guest. They said it helped strengthen the community and allowed people to grow together. That idea appealed to many. It felt good to be part of something that promised both security and momentum. The team used warm greetings every time someone new walked into a meeting. They made people feel important. The first presentations introduced the two main offerings. One product focused on steady monthly returns. The other targeted slightly higher yields, but still promised minimal risk. Both were explained with straight lines and simple charts. Those charts showed consistent upward movement and suggested a long history of success. Investors felt safe when they saw those images. For a long time, no one questioned the pitch. People received their first payouts. They told others about their experiences. They shared stories in group chats and community gatherings. They said the company responded quickly to messages and always answered questions about balances. It felt like they had finally found something stable. But confidence started to weaken a little when small issues appeared. A few investors began to experience delayed payouts. The company said the delays came from banking traffic and nothing more. They promised all payments would arrive soon. Most people accepted that explanation at first. It sounded ordinary. They did not want to imagine a larger problem. More delays followed. Then came shifting explanations. Sometimes the company blamed banks. Sometimes they blamed external processing. Other times they said funds were being moved for better positioning. The tone stayed calm and reassuring, but investors noticed that the answers were not consistent. One investor emailed the company 3 times in a row and received 3 different explanations from 3 different people. That did not feel right. He forwarded the emails to 2 friends in the group. They began to compare what they had been told. Their explanations did not match either. That was the moment they began to worry. By the end of the month, the same concerns began to spread through the broader investor base. People noticed that the company had started sending general updates instead of personalized replies. Those updates said the company was performing internal coordination and that incoming funds were being processed in stages. The updates hinted that strong returns were still coming. Some investors wanted to believe it. They had put in large amounts of savings and did not want to consider the alternative. Others had already begun to feel that something deeper was wrong. They tried to request full account statements. Those requests were often met with long delays. When statements finally arrived, some did not match earlier screenshots or printed records. The first group to gather in the conference room had been talking quietly for weeks. They had been sharing their concerns in private calls and text threads. They had all tried to get clear answers. They did not receive them. So they decided to meet in person to sort out what they knew. The meeting started with a calm tone. People went around the table explaining what they had been told. One man said he had requested documentation about the assets backing his investment. He had been promised paperwork within 3 business days. It had been 3 weeks and nothing had come. Others nodded. They had experienced the same issue. A woman said she had asked for a simple payout in early spring. It should have taken a short time. Instead, she received a message that said funds were being repositioned. The next message said funds were undergoing verification. She said she did not understand any of it. She said the explanations felt like they were designed to delay her. In that meeting, people continued to share stories. Each story matched the outline of someone else's experience. That created a clear pattern. Investors had begun to face late payments, confusing updates, and slow communication. Those patterns made the group uneasy. They decided to collect their documents and review them together. One investor pulled out a notebook filled with dates. He had written down every message he received from the company. He had printed screenshots and taped them to the pages. When he flipped through the dated entries, the group noticed that the explanations changed almost every week. That discovery increased the tension in the room. A small group stepped outside to call a contact who had experience with financial compliance. They wanted to understand whether the issues they were seeing could be normal. The contact told them that some delays can happen in certain industries, but repeated patterns of shifting explanations were serious red flags. He told them to seek further information from the company or consider filing a formal complaint. That call changed the tone of the meeting. People began to realize that their problems were not isolated. They were part of a larger breakdown. They decided to send a joint message to the company asking for clear answers. They asked for documentation, payout timelines, and verification of backing assets. They gave the company a firm deadline. The company responded with a short message. It thanked them for their patience and said the team was working through short-term liquidity alignments. It promised that all accounts were healthy. The message did not include the documents investors had asked for. It did not offer any specific dates. It did not calm the room. Several investors began to discuss the option of contacting law enforcement. They had hoped to avoid that step. They feared that it would create a public problem. But they also felt they could not wait any longer. One of them had already spoken informally with a local officer. That officer suggested filing a written complaint if they believed their money was at risk. By the following morning, 2 investors submitted official complaints. They described the delays, the conflicting messages, and the missing documents. They included copies of printed statements and emails. They told the officer they feared something was wrong behind the scenes. They did not know what it was. They only knew they needed help. Law enforcement began with simple background checks. They reviewed publicly available records connected to Regan and his associates. They looked for prior business filings, financial disputes, or known regulatory concerns. Nothing in those first checks confirmed wrongdoing, but nothing fully explained the investor issues either. The officer who received the complaint contacted a financial crimes unit. That unit reviewed the early notes and decided to begin a preliminary inquiry. They needed more information before they could escalate. They wanted to know how many investors had complaints. They wanted to know how long the delays had been occurring. They wanted to know if the company had provided any real documentation about its assets. The investors continued to gather more records. They created a shared folder where people could upload their statements. They tried to identify patterns. They highlighted the dates when payouts were delayed. They compared the company's messages across those same dates. The more they looked, the more inconsistencies they found. One investor printed a timeline of every payout he had received since joining. The timeline looked regular at first, but then the dates started stretching out. The returns slowed. The numbers no longer matched earlier projections. When he placed the timeline on the table beside the updates from the company, the pattern became clear. More investors joined the review. Some had invested modest amounts. Others had put in significant savings. All of them wanted answers. They started to understand that the company's explanations did not hold together. They realized that they had believed in a story that no longer made sense. Law enforcement continued to gather information. They asked investors to provide any emails or texts that showed delays or shifting explanations. They noted each communication. They created a working list of concerns. They wanted to understand whether this was a temporary liquidity issue or something else. Back in the investor group, tension grew. People asked each other how they could have missed the warning signs. They wondered why they trusted the pitch so strongly. Many said the early returns made everything feel safe. Others said they trusted the people who invited them. Those early feelings of security now felt fragile. The group reached a point where they could no longer wait for the company to respond. They submitted more complaints. They asked the officer for updates each day. They kept gathering records. They stayed in close contact with each other. They wanted to understand the truth about their investments. By the end of the month, law enforcement had collected enough information to move the inquiry forward. They noted the volume of complaints. They noted the repeated delays. They noted the inconsistency of the company's explanations. They decided to begin a deeper review. The investors felt a mix of fear and relief. Fear because they suspected major losses. Relief because someone official was finally paying attention. They did not know what the next step would be. They only knew that the first cracks in the company's promises had grown wider. The officer leading the inquiry scheduled meetings with several investors. He asked them to describe their experiences in detail. They explained the pitch events. They described the warm greetings from the team. They recalled the promises of safety and steady returns. They gave copies of their documents. He asked whether the company had ever provided proof of the backing assets. Every investor said no. They said they had repeatedly asked for verification. They said the company had always delayed or redirected their questions. The officer took careful notes. He asked whether returns had come from the claimed investment structures or whether they seemed to come from new investor money. Investors admitted they had no proof, but they said the timing of payouts suggested that new deposits were funding earlier withdrawals. The officer marked this as a key concern. He asked about communication patterns. Investors described how messages changed over time. They said early responses were personal and quick. Later responses were generic and slow. Sometimes messages contradicted earlier updates. The officer saw a growing pattern. While he gathered facts, the group of investors continued to grow. More people reached out after hearing rumors of problems. Some had invested small amounts. Others had put in large sums. They were all worried. They all wanted clarity. At this point, investors began to accept that they might never receive the documents they had requested. They began to wonder if the assets claimed in the presentations had ever existed. They recalled the charts and explanations from Regan's team. They now questioned every part of it. The inquiry continued to expand. Officers reviewed the timeline of delays. They compared investor statements. They created early diagrams to understand the structure of the products. They noted that promotional materials often used simple language but lacked technical detail. They considered that a warning sign. The atmosphere inside the investor group shifted from confusion to urgency. People started calling each other late at night. They worried about their savings. They worried about their families. Many felt ashamed. They wondered how they could have trusted something that now felt fragile. They also felt anger. They felt that the company had misled them. They felt that they had been kept in the dark for too long. They blamed themselves for not asking harder questions. The shared shame and frustration created a strong bond in the group. They supported each other while waiting for answers. By now, the officer in charge understood that the situation was serious. He had read enough messages and statements to know that something larger was happening. He forwarded the file to a specialized financial team that handled potential fraud cases. He recommended that they review it quickly. Investors waited for news. They checked their messages constantly. They updated the shared folder with new documents. They tried to stay hopeful, but deep down they feared that the truth would be worse than they imagined. The officer contacted several investors late one afternoon. He asked for additional documents. He said the financial team needed clearer timelines. That message signaled that the inquiry had moved to a new level. It meant the case was now under close review. As night fell, many investors sat at their dining tables sorting through papers. They circled dates, they highlighted suspicious messages, they printed copies for the officers. They wanted to make sure nothing was missed. They needed answers. By the end of the week, the officer told the group that the inquiry would continue. He said more information was needed before any conclusions could be made. He said the early signs did not rule out a temporary liquidity issue, but he also said the signs could indicate a much bigger problem. The question now hung over everyone. Was this a passing delay or the beginning of a major collapse? This marked the end of the first chapter. Chapter 2, The Hidden Structure Begins to Show. The financial crimes team began its review early on a Monday morning. They started with the stack of investor complaints that had come in over the previous weeks. Each complaint told a version of the same story. People had been promised safety, steady returns, and asset backing. Now, they felt something had shifted. The team wanted to understand the pattern behind the pitch. They arranged the complaints on a long table and organized them by date. They looked at the earliest reports of delayed payouts. They compared those delays to the messages Regan's team had sent. The delays stretched further with each new complaint. The explanations from the company changed more often than seemed reasonable. The team took notes on each inconsistency. They wanted to understand who the investors were. They read through the profiles provided in the complaints. Some were retirees who used the products to support their monthly expenses. Others ran small businesses and placed their savings into what they thought was a safe option. A few were professionals in finance or real estate who had still trusted the pitch. The range of investors caught the team's attention. One investigator commented that the mix of investors suggested a broad recruiting network. Another noted that this type of variety often appeared in cases where trust played a major role. People had been referred by friends or family. That trust made them less likely to question early details. The team added that observation to the file. The next step was understanding how returns were paid. The team reviewed payout records submitted by investors. They noticed that payouts did not follow a clear investment pattern. Instead, the timing of payouts seemed linked to the arrival of new deposits. That raised concern. The investigator in charge asked for a deeper review of cash flows. The team requested any bank statements investors had received. Some investors had uploaded them. Others provided screenshots from account dashboards. A few had printed monthly summaries that showed returns but did not show underlying asset movement. The team compared these with the payout timelines. They noticed that when new investors joined, payouts to earlier investors appeared shortly after. This pattern suggested investor-to-investor recycling. The team understood that as a major warning sign. They circled several timeline entries and created a working diagram. They drew arrows from new deposits to earlier payouts. The early version of the diagram already hinted at a structure with no visible underlying asset growth. The team decided the pattern needed deeper review. Next, they turned to promotional materials. Several investors had kept brochures, pitch notes, and digital slides from the early presentations. The materials used confident language. They referenced strong oversight and asset-backed protection, but they did not list the assets. They did not specify where funds were held. They did not show any third-party verification. The team viewed that as another red flag. They read through descriptions of how the products worked. The text claimed that returns came from a structured method that used old principles, but there were no details about how or where those principles were applied. Investigators knew that legitimate products usually provided clear descriptions that could be verified. The team noted that the materials lacked that clarity. They also looked at updates sent to investors. Those updates often used simple statements that reassured people without saying much. The messages said funds were strong. They said temporary delays were normal. They said coordination was underway. None of the messages addressed the concerns that investors had raised. Investigators decided they needed to speak directly with people connected to the company. They created a list of associates mentioned in investor complaints. Some had been part of the pitch events. Others had communicated with investors about payouts or verification. The team prepared questions about timelines, documentation, and internal operations. They began interviews with the people easiest to reach. Some associates gave vague descriptions of their roles. A few said they were only involved in marketing or administration. Others said they believed the products were safe because Regan had explained them clearly. None of them provided proof of the assets backing the products. One associate said he had seen internal spreadsheets that showed account balances. He said he trusted those spreadsheets because senior members of the team had used them in meetings. Investigators asked whether he had seen any external verification. He said no. He said he assumed verification happened elsewhere. The team noted that assumption. Another associate said he handled investor communications. He kept records of messages sent to investors. He said he followed instructions from higher up. Investigators asked why explanations changed from week to week. The associate said he only forwarded what he was told. He did not know why the information changed. He did not know how funds were managed. The team noticed that associates often referenced internal documents that they could not produce. They mentioned spreadsheets, dashboards, and summaries, but they did not have any of them. They said the documents were held by the senior leadership. They said access was restricted. That lack of transparency raised more concerns. Investigators turned next to financial documents investors had provided. They reviewed monthly balance summaries. Many of them looked neat and consistent, but a closer look revealed issues. Some summaries repeated the same structure each month, with only minor changes. Others contained numbers that did not align with the timing of investor deposits. The team highlighted these inconsistencies. One summary displayed a steady upward trend even during months when multiple payouts had been requested. Another showed returns during a period when investors said the company had frozen withdrawals. These irregularities suggested that the summaries were not based on actual asset performance. The team added those findings to the file. They also found account dashboards that displayed daily balances. Those balances usually moved in one direction. They rarely showed volatility or decline. That pattern struck investigators as unrealistic. Legitimate markets changed daily. The team suspected that the dashboards may have been built to show steady growth rather than reflect real activity. They needed more information. They contacted more investors. They asked for any additional documents, messages, or screenshots that showed how the company communicated. Several investors forwarded messages where the company told them funds were undergoing verification. A few investors provided messages where the company said it had switched to a new banking partner. The team compared these messages. The timeline of such updates did not match. One investor received a message about banking transitions in early spring. Another received a similar message 2 months later. A third received the same message even later. This suggested that the explanation was used to delay different groups at different times. The team marked that as a possible delay tactic. Investigators also reviewed explanations that referenced market conditions. they noticed that messages about market slowdowns did not align with actual financial data from those periods. The team concluded that these explanations were broad statements rather than meaningful information. They added that to the report. The team needed to understand the true flow of money. They could only see fragments. They had the payout schedules. They had the timing of new deposits. They had summaries from investors, but they did not have a full map. They decided to create a detailed diagram to visualize what they knew. They placed new investor deposits along the top of the diagram. They placed payout dates along the bottom. They drew arrows between the two. Most of the arrows pointed downward. Few arrows linked deposits to any identified asset. The diagram now resembled early stages of a recycling structure. The team reinforced that conclusion with notes from interviews. Meanwhile, investors who had spoken to investigators waited anxiously. They checked their emails every day. They kept gathering documents. They wanted to know whether the team had found anything concrete. They hoped for clarity. They feared confirmation of something worse. The team scheduled another round of interviews. This time, they wanted to ask deeper questions about internal operations. They started with mid-level associates who had been involved in communication and coordination. They asked about the process used to generate the monthly summaries. They asked about account dashboards. They asked about data sources. One associate said he believed senior members fed numbers into a central system. He said he did not know how those numbers were verified. Investigators asked whether he had seen records from external custodians. He said no. They asked whether he had seen trade confirmations. He said no. He said he assumed others had access to those documents. The team noted that his assumptions did not match the reality of the case. Another associate described a weekly meeting where senior members discussed investor growth. He recalled charts showing steady increases in both deposits and payouts, but he said he had never seen detailed records linking the two. He said the discussions focused on momentum and expansion rather than verification. That raised concern among the investigators. They asked another associate how the group handled investor questions about assets. She said she usually forwarded those questions to senior members. She said senior members often told her to reassure investors that documents were being prepared. She said the documents never came. She said she did not know why. Investigators noted that this pattern matched investor complaints. The team then reviewed internal inconsistencies found in promotional materials. The brochures claimed that funds were held in secure accounts, but they did not list the accounts. They claimed that returns came from a diversified strategy, but they did not list the strategy. They claimed oversight from specialists, but no names or firms were mentioned. Investigators viewed this as deliberate vagueness. The team cross-checked those claims with investor experiences. Many investors said they had asked for proof of asset backing. They said they received assurances, but no actual documents. That confirmed a major gap between promotional claims and accessible evidence. Investigators next examined digital dashboards more closely. They showed clean upward lines, but some dashboards included timestamps that did not align with investor messages. For example, one investor had a dashboard showing updated balances on a day when she received a message saying system maintenance prevented updates. The team compared multiple dashboards and found similar discrepancies. These issues prompted the team to escalate the case internally. They needed authority to request deeper information. They prepared a summary detailing the investor profiles, payout patterns, promotional inconsistencies, and mixed interview accounts. They presented the summary to the financial crime supervisor, who approved further investigation. With approval granted, the team contacted more investors who had not yet filed complaints. Several agreed to meet. They told investigators about their experiences. Many said they trusted the pitch because early returns were steady. They said the team seemed organized and professional. They described phone calls where Regan or his associates spoke confidently about long-term plans. Investigators noticed that several investors said they felt encouraged to bring new participants. They said the team often praised them for expanding the community. They said they believed this was part of a legitimate marketing effort. They never considered that such growth could be necessary for payouts. One investor said he remembered a pitch call where an associate described the products as a chance to build generational wealth. Investigators asked whether he had seen proof of returns beyond what he received. He said no. He said he only saw what was in his account. He said he assumed the assets existed because Regan had spoken with conviction. The team noted that trust played a major role in maintaining the structure. As the team gathered more information, they turned to the spreadsheets referenced in interviews. They still did not have them, but they noticed references to spreadsheets in several investor messages. Investors said the company used internal data to calculate returns. They said the company sometimes referenced internal processing. These statements made investigators suspicious. They wondered whether internal spreadsheets were used to create the balance summaries. They asked associates again about the spreadsheets. Some acknowledged that they saw them during meetings. Others said they had only heard about them. None of them could produce the documents. The team marked this as a significant gap. Investigators also spoke with an associate who once handled administrative tasks. He said he saw documents that listed daily balances. He said they were created by a senior member. He said the numbers were entered manually. That detail drew attention. If numbers were entered manually, it raised questions about their accuracy and source. The team recorded that detail. They then reviewed the timeline of investor concerns more carefully. Delays grew longer over time. Explanations grew wider. Some investors were told payouts were coming soon. Others were told funds were being verified. The messages did not follow a consistent sequence. The team believed the explanations were being used to maintain calm rather than provide truth. The investigators prepared a timeline showing how explanations evolved. At first, the company blamed minor issues, then it blamed external partners, then it referenced internal reorganization. None of these appeared connected to documented events. The team viewed that as a significant warning. Another investor contacted the team with new information. She said she once asked for a breakdown of her returns. She said the company told her the information was proprietary. She said they told her that revealing the structure could risk the method. She said she accepted that explanation at the time. Now she regretted it. Investigators compared that account with others. Several investors said they had been told similar things. The team noted that legitimate companies usually provide clear breakdowns. They do not hide behind secrecy. They do not tell investors that transparency risks the method. The team continued interviews with associates. One associate said he believed the company was expanding into new areas. He said he heard discussions about growing investor reach. He said he believed that was why delays occurred. Investigators asked whether he had seen any contracts or documents related to expansion. He said no. The team marked that as speculation. Another associate said he had seen several digital drafts of spreadsheets. He said he remembered that the spreadsheets included formulas, but he said the formulas did not link to external data. They referenced other cells in the same sheet. That detail concerned investigators. Spreadsheets that reference only themselves often serve as internal models rather than records of real funds. The team reviewed this information carefully. They believed they were beginning to see the outline of how the products functioned, but they still needed clearer proof. They requested more detailed statements from additional investors. They wanted to see how summaries changed over time. They compared new statements with earlier ones. The pattern held. Balance summaries increased steadily and rarely matched the timing of actual deposits. The team decided to reach out to a few investors who had stopped receiving payouts altogether. They asked how the company explained the halt. The investors described long messages filled with encouragement. They said the messages insisted that returns were coming soon. They said the company asked them to be patient. They said the company made no mention of any underlying problems. Investigators noticed that the tone of those messages was consistent across investors. They used the same phrases. They promised stability. They promised a strong future. But none of them addressed the fact that payouts had stopped. The team marked this as a sign of deeper issues. With all the gathered information, the team created a more advanced cash flow chart. They placed investor deposits on one side. They placed payouts on the other. They drew lines representing funds. Most lines pointed straight from new money to earlier investors. Very few lines pointed to any external source. The chart now resembled a classic recycling cycle. The team added that to the official file. At this point, the financial crimes team understood that the core problem went deeper than delays or confusion. They saw a structure where returns seemed to come from new deposits. They saw promotional materials that lacked detail. They saw associates who could not explain internal processes. They saw investors who had been reassured without evidence. But they still did not know where the money had gone. They needed proof. They needed to understand how the structure operated at the highest level. They needed access to financial records that were not yet in their hands. They needed to identify the movement between accounts that kept payouts flowing. The team decided they had reached the point where the case could not remain a preliminary inquiry. They prepared a new report, summarizing all findings from investor profiles, payout analyses, interview details, and document reviews. They prepared it for a higher level of review. They needed authority to take the next step. The question now shifted. If the guarantees were not real, where had the money gone? The chapter ends here. Chapter 3, the break that changed everything. The financial crimes team began its next phase on a cloudy morning when they received authorization to access deeper financial records. The approval allowed them to request account information from banks and third-party processors. It also allowed them to pursue digital evidence that had not been available earlier. This marked a turning point. The team knew they needed to find the movement of money before they could understand the full scale of the case. They sent requests to several banks linked to investor statements. They asked for account activity logs, incoming deposits, outgoing transfers, and internal notes. They requested records for all accounts associated with the Next Level and Yield products. They also asked for historical statements covering the period when investor concerns first appeared. The team waited for banks to reply. While waiting, they reviewed digital files that had already come in. These included messages between associates, internal notes, and documents that had been recovered from earlier interviews. They found references to shifting funds between multiple accounts. They found notes describing days when senior members discussed how to keep payouts moving. The notes did not mention assets. They mentioned only the timing of deposits and withdrawals. One investigator focused on a digital thread that mentioned pressure to meet payout demands. The thread suggested that senior members had monitored new investor deposits closely. When a deposit came in, they had directed funds toward pending payouts. This confirmed what the early diagrams showed, but it still did not answer where the rest of the money had gone. Banks began sending in records. Large files arrived over several days. The team printed key pages and placed them across long tables. They organized the documents by account and by date. Each account had pages of transactions. Some showed heavy activity. Others showed quiet periods followed by sudden movements. The team began marking patterns with highlighters. One account showed a series of incoming investor deposits. The deposits arrived on regular intervals, but instead of moving into an investment pool, the funds moved quickly out. They flowed to several other accounts. They flowed to payouts for earlier investors. Some transfers moved to accounts held by companies linked to Regan's team. The investigators traced each line. Another account showed large transfers to personal accounts. The team circled those entries. They cross-referenced the transfers with dates when investors had complained of delays. The transfers raised questions. If funds were being moved out at the same time, investors were told the company was reorganizing, then something deeper was wrong. The investigators flagged the account. More records arrived. Some revealed international transfers. Others showed repeated withdrawals that left accounts nearly empty. A few accounts showed short bursts of activity followed by long periods of inactivity. The team created charts showing how money moved between the accounts. The patterns looked familiar to the investigators who had seen similar cases. The break came when the team discovered a cluster of accounts held under smaller company names tied to senior members. These accounts received steady transfers from investor deposit accounts. The transfers did not match any asset-backed structure. Instead, they created a chain that moved money through several layers. This allowed the movement to stay hidden unless examined closely. The team mapped out the flow. They placed the accounts in a large diagram. They used colored lines to represent transfers. Investor deposits appeared at the top. From there, the funds moved down into holding accounts. Then they split. Some moved to payout accounts. Others moved to personal accounts or accounts connected to related companies. The diagram showed that the money did not go to investments. It moved in circles. Investigators realized they had found the core structure. They had identified how returns were paid and how money disappeared. They reviewed the records again to confirm the total movement. When they added the numbers, the total exceeded $60 million. That figure represented confirmed movement. It did not include funds that could not yet be traced. They presented the findings to the financial crime supervisor. The supervisor asked detailed questions. The team showed the account maps. They explained how investor funds were recycled. They explained how the company's messages about safety did not match the real structure. They explained how the movement resembled a classic Ponzi-style cycle. They presented the evidence clearly. The supervisor approved the next step. The case now moved into a phase that involved prosecutors. The investigators prepared a report summarizing all financial flows. They documented each account. They explained the recurring structure. They included examples of transfers that linked investor deposits to personal accounts. They shared the timeline of complaints and delays. The case now carried high priority. Prosecutors reviewed the file in a secure office. They asked the investigators to walk through the diagrams. They studied the flow of money. They compared the claims made in promotional materials with the financial realities. They noted the lack of asset movement. They noted the absence of verification. They noted the heavy dependence on new deposits to pay earlier investors. Prosecutors then examined messages collected during the investigation. They saw messages that reassured investors while accounts drained. They saw messages that repeated the same phrases about temporary delays, even as money moved out. They saw internal messages showing concern over meeting payouts. They saw references to spreadsheets that were manually updated. These messages confirmed the narrative. With financial evidence and digital records aligned, prosecutors determined they had enough to move forward. They prepared charging documents outlining the alleged structure. They described how over 300 investors had placed money into the next level and yield products. They described how investor funds had been redirected. They described how the returns given to early investors were funded by the deposits of later investors. They described how the structure collapsed when new money slowed. Prosecutors presented the findings to senior leadership. They outlined the timeline of events. They explained how the structure met the definition of a Ponzi-style scheme. They recommended charges based on fraud and related financial offenses. The leadership agreed. The team was instructed to prepare for formal action. Investigators then moved to a new phase. They coordinated with field teams to locate Regan and members of his group. They prepared warrants for accounts and offices. They organized teams to secure digital devices. They ensured that all legal procedures were followed carefully. This stage required precision. On the morning the action took place, investigators gathered in a central office. They reviewed assignments. They confirmed addresses. They made sure each team had the documents needed. When everything was ready, they moved. One team visited an office used by the group. They entered with legal authority. They secured computers, phones, and files. They found binders with summaries that matched investor statements but did not show real assets. They found printed spreadsheets with handwritten notes. They found lists of new investor deposits. The team photographed each item and packed them carefully. Another team went to a residence connected to a senior member. They collected digital devices. They collected external drives. They collected boxes containing financial records. Inside one box, they found a notebook with entries tracking the flow of funds. The entries aligned with earlier diagrams. Investigators added the notebook to the evidence. A third team met with Regan. He was informed of the allegations. He was given an opportunity to speak. He declined. He asked for legal representation. Investigators recorded his request and moved forward. Prosecutors filed charges later that day. The documents alleged that over $60 million had been lost. They described the structure as a Ponzi-style operation. They listed examples of how investor funds had been redirected. They cited accounts where transfers went to related companies and personal holdings. They noted that no real asset pool existed. The news spread quickly among investors. Some gathered again in the same conference room where they had first met. Others spoke on phone calls. Many cried. Some stared at the charging documents for hours. They felt a mix of anger, shock, and relief. They were angry that their trust had been taken. They were shocked by the scale of the losses. They were relieved that investigators had confirmed what they feared. Retirees faced difficult choices. Some had lost savings they depended on. Small business owners faced pressure as they realized they would not recover the funds they had counted on. Some investors felt embarrassed for believing the promises. Others felt betrayed by people they trusted. The emotional fallout spread across communities. Several investors joined together to form support groups. They shared their experiences. They helped each other navigate next steps. They discussed legal options. They contacted organizations that specialized in fraud recovery. They attended meetings to understand the restitution process. Their shared struggle brought them closer. As the case moved through the system, prosecutors continued to gather evidence. They prepared witnesses. They organized financial charts. They reviewed digital messages again to ensure accuracy. They met with investigators to clarify technical details. They prepared to present the case fully. In the weeks that followed, more details emerged. Financial analysts confirmed that the movement of funds was consistent with a recycling structure. They confirmed that no real investment activity had occurred. They confirmed that the claimed assets did not exist. These conclusions strengthened the case. Eventually, the case reached a courtroom. The charges were read. The evidence was presented. Financial charts were displayed on screens. Witnesses described their experiences. Investigators explained how the structure worked. Prosecutors outlined each step of the scheme. Defense attorneys responded. They questioned the timing. They questioned the evidence. They questioned whether intent could be proven. But the financial records spoke clearly. The timeline of investor complaints matched the movement of money. The messages from the company matched the delays. The absence of real assets matched the allegations. The charts showing the flow of funds told a story that could not be explained away. The court reached its conclusion. The outcome reflected the evidence. The decision confirmed that the structure had operated as a Ponzi-style scheme. It confirmed that investors had suffered significant losses. It confirmed that the company's claims of safety and strong returns had not been grounded in reality. The ruling brought closure for some investors. For others, the pain remained. After the case ended, investors focused on rebuilding. Some worked with restitution programs. Others sought financial counseling. Some returned to work to recover lost savings. Many shared their experiences to warn others. They spoke at community meetings. They explained how trust can be used against people. They encouraged others to verify claims before investing. The case also raised questions for regulators. They asked how such a structure could grow without earlier intervention. They asked how investor materials could circulate without verification. They asked how trust networks could be used to attract victims. These questions led to discussions about policy and oversight. For many investors, the emotional cost lasted longer than the financial cost. They remembered the nights they spent worrying. They remembered the meetings where they shared fears. They remembered the moment they learned that the money was gone. These memories stayed with them. Yet some found strength in the lessons they learned. They realized the importance of asking questions. They realized that steady returns without details can be a warning. They realize that transparency matters. They realize that real investments have records that can be verified. In the end, the case left a mark on every person involved. It changed how communities viewed investment pitches. It changed how people approached financial decisions. It changed how investigators monitored similar structures. It created a lasting reminder that trust alone is not enough. For the financial crimes team, the case reinforced the importance of following evidence. They saw how one break can change the entire trajectory. they learned how collective voices from investors can initiate action. They carried those lessons into future investigations. The story closed with a single truth. Promises of safety mean nothing without proof. This was the cost of believing in an investment that had never existed.